Episode commencing in 3, 2, 1. Episode initiated.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Cosmic Crit 2.0, the podcast. This is your GM, Patrick, and we're continuing on setting up Series 1 with a sequence of Episode Zeros this year for our maiden voyage, our first adventure, Kilt of the Grave World. Joining me for a short episode, a one-on-one character discussion of what they're looking to play this coming year, is my good friend Dialer. Hey, Dialer, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
How are you doing, buddy? How are things?
Things good. Just got back from the beach. Spent a week at the beach with my family.
Oh, sounds awful. Must be so tough.
It was so tough. We did have one particularly bad day at the beach where we were all hanging out, you know, just digging in the sand and stuff. And then just like four or five yellow jackets just decided to move in, stung my mom twice. And, you know, we just packed up fast and ran away. So not quite sure why there was a gang of yellow jackets who wanted to protect their turf, but that was that was rough.
If it was a cartoon, someone would have brought honey instead of sunscreen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, that'll do. Well, that's why. I hate when they, is it hornets or yellow jackets that like fly around your Coke can? They're like, give that Coke.
Oh yeah.
I want that Coke. That's mine now. I'm like, get out of here, yellow jerks.
I want that sweet, sweet brown juice.
You know what's so funny is they do not do that. I don't think they do with Diet Coke. They're like, no, you can keep that. They're picky. No.
Aspartame, like, or whatever.
Not real sugar. No, thank you.
Yeah. I had this massive phobia for many, many, and I still to somewhat some in some ways I do, but when I was maybe 12 or 13, I was told a story about, you know, at my parents' house, it was like a family get together and someone drank their Coke and had
a little extra
yellow jacket in it.
Buzz.
Yeah. And
besides caffeine.
It nailed them going down. They had to get rushed to the hospital. They ended up being okay. And so, I mean, for a while there, I would not even take a drink outside. I just wouldn't do it. And then nowadays, I'll have a drink outside. But if you see me outside with a drink, you'll almost always see me. If I leave it alone, I'll come back to it and I'll just pour out. I'll just pour out just a little bit onto the ground.
One for the homies.
Yeah, one for the homies, one for the wasp.
Well, see, I just always chew my beverages in case there's any grit or extra protein in there. I just take a swig and go. I drink like a dog from a hose, or just like nom, nom, nom.
Hey, it works. Haven't been stung, so you know, keep it up.
Good, nice try, bees.
Outsmarted you once again.
Yeah, Tyler, we have never done this new series or this new iteration of Cosmic Crit, which I'm calling 2.0. We're going to be doing a lot of things differently. What better time to change up the podcast when we get a brand new edition of Starfinder?
Not with the old.
I don't think we've ever done one-on-one character kind of setup episodes. For Dead Man Roll No Crits, we had one-on-one background and play episodes, which we might do as well here, but doing these because, you know, in the past, I think folks have been, we've had online kind of like text discussions about creating characters, but we've never come together and talked about our characters or done a draft, and we've never had like full conversations about like where to go and like what to do. So it's a little different, but I hope you'll enjoy this, and you know, maybe we don't do it next time if it's not needed. But are you excited to officially play Starfinder Second Edition and adventure for the first time? Full adventure path.
Absolutely. Did no one get Mystic? I forgot in the draft.
No, we have no Mystic. No.
I could have done it. I don't know if that one would have cost me extra points. I can't remember what was on my extra points list. But yeah, I'm really excited for a whole number of reasons. You know, I think the main reason being that, as with all TTRPGs that have, you know, that are long running, whether it be Pathfinder, Starfinder First Edition, the bloat gets pretty tough to deal with. I have a pretty, you know, unknown line that once something becomes such a big bear to try to get your hands around for character creation, you know, I find limited choices to be much more engaging than, you know, 4, 5, 7, 8 books of options. It really gives me all those books. It gives me FOMO. It makes me worry that I'm not picking the right things that are out there to, you know, best represent my character or to be the best teammate I can be and be effective both, you know, socially and in combat. So when I'm looking at just, you know, one or, you know, maybe 3 books, I feel pretty confident that I've combed through everything, but boy, sometimes, and that's how I was feeling about Starfinder Second or First Edition. So happy to have a reset, happy to be able to sort of wipe the slate clean and get my arms back around something. So very eager to dive in.
So, you know, speaking of the limited options, we did our first character drafts, our first full character draft a few weeks ago when we're recording this. So it's still pretty fresh. And you seem to get the short end of the stick in a few of your options that you were looking at were taken. I think Drew took a class you were interested in, maybe, and Bert randomly rolled. I guess they both randomly rolled.
They both randomly rolled.
Bert rolled a ancestry that you were looking at.
Yeah, and so
that was your first choice.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously I sat down and I made a little tier list just like you would, just like for an actual fantasy draft. And, you know, for ancestry, I didn't like my role. You know, since we were doing a serpentine draft, I really wanted to get, there were not a lot of ancestry options. So I would have liked to pick higher up on the ancestry because there's tons of backgrounds that could have been just fine.
Yeah.
And I had lots of class ideas. So what was important to me were one of two ancestries were really important to me because they really, I thought they would have played very nicely. And because some of the classes that I wanted were 3-point buys. So with a 5-point buy system, I could only afford 2 points on the ancestry, one or 2 points, obviously. So yeah, when having to pick last on ancestry ended up hurting me big time. I ended up pivoting pretty hard to some lower tier options that I had, but you know, I still think it'll work just fine. But Vlaka was my number one choice and I just thought, well, no one's going to pick it. I did not, but you know, the random dice decided to curse it. But I wasn't even worried about it
because already there's so many ancestries, even just in Starfinder. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, randomly taken away from you, which is
and
bonkers.
Then, so that was nuts. And then I thought, well, that's okay. I still have Patra, which would have been a great option for me. And Drew took that. I think it was Drew took that. Someone took Patra. Maybe it was Miles.
Miles,
yeah. So then I was really left. Ultimately, the last one that I was kind of waffling on was Kasathan. And then I had written down Fetchling, but it's 3 points. So I knew that I wouldn't be able to do the class that I initially was wanting to get.
Right, but that class was taken away from you. No, I guess it was taken away from you after that.
After, yeah. So, but it ended up being, because I didn't know if I was, you know, especially once I realized that I could snag operative, I was kind of okay again, you know. Originally, I was hoping to do maybe something with the monk class.
Mm.
But realizing that, you know, oh, well, you know, I am the top pick and no one's trying to bid away that top pick. And I have never played operative. So I just was like, you know what? We'll just yoink that. Very thematic for a fetchling. So yeah. It worked out okay.
Yeah, I think it came out all right in the end. But yeah, you were saying you did like having, I mean, it is technically every option in Starfinder 2nd Edition and Pathfinder 2nd Edition that we're playing around with, but limited in a little bit that you couldn't be like all Pathfinder options.
Yeah. And the point by on the draft really helped. Again, it helped narrow the choices, you know, knowing that like what's more important to me with, you know, the character I want to build. Is the ancestry or the class, you know, more important? You know, for me, because, you know the initial idea being Vlaka monk, which is essentially just the blind monk trope, right? Which is what I was like, oh, this would be fun, you know, blind dog monk, that's cool. Something like almost out of Sekiro, but...
Or Dipper like got a From blind song. Oracle, and it's probably going to work even better.
Which is also totally cool. Yeah, you know, so that ended up working perfectly. But yeah, it you know, it just kept the choices simple, and it also made it a lot easier to focus on, you know, okay, if we're gonna, you know, if we're really aiming for operative, well, you know, here's the selection that would, you know, maybe be best suited to you know, being an operative, and let's you know, pick from those.
Well, let's talk about the operative, the class that you pulled here. Is this your first time playing an operative? Like you've not played it in Starfinder 1E for any season?
Correct. Yeah.
I know I can look at my notes to confirm that, but
haven't played it on the podcast, haven't played it in SFS. I've literally never ever touched one.
Now that they've got downgraded a little bit, you're like, now is when the iron's hot to strike.
Perfect. It's the perfect time.
No longer the quote-unquote skill monkeys of the Starfinder universe, the rogues. They're a little different. They are a little samey, but unlike a conditional thing like a rogue where you're trying to get someone flat-footed, off guard to your attacks, you've got aim as like a primary function. So they're more technical killers, assassins, snipers. Yep. I will say it's in the playtest last year, all the way like November of last year, when I got to play Starfinder 2E for the first time, I got to play the operative and I was blown away. They toned down like the level one version of ISEF that you can play with, but they had a sniper rifle and it was like a deadly D8 sniper rifle. And if you're aiming with that and get a critical hit, it's like 2D8 plus 2D4. So just so much damage. It feels great when you land a crit from across the map and there's just a mist where your target used to be. Are you excited about the operative? I know maybe it wasn't your first choice, but
no, but you know what? When I started actually looking at the operative, I realized, because again, remember your original idea of Lock and Monk, operative has a specialization that's entirely based on hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like, oh, okay, well, hey, we can still do because, you know, I really wanted to, one of the things that I was thinking about with this character is I wanted to make a really happy character. I wanted to make a character that was in a way silly, but very upbeat and energetic. And I was trying to think of how could I mix that with the whole kills people thing. And because, you know, I just think that there's I really wanted them to have this air about them that kind of put people at ease or kind of maybe put them off their guard, which is hard to do if you have like a big sniper rifle or this, you know, sword. And I thought, well, you know, if their whole operative style was their, you know, their hands, their body, then, you know, it kind of, that can kind of play into that a little bit about their, and I'm sure some of the skills I pick will hopefully reflect this, but that, you know, they're just a disarming individual that, you know, people make the mistake of letting, you know, get too close to where they can, you know, use their body as their primary weapon.
So you're looking at Skirmisher? No. Is that the option? No.
I can't remember. I don't have the book up.
Operative specializations is something that you pick at first level, and you have the choice between Ghost, Infiltrator, Skirmisher, Sniper, and Striker.
Striker is probably it.
Yeah, Skirmisher looks like is pistol-based, and yeah, Striker is, I guess, the more melee option. While Dexterity is going to be your primary attribute as a operative, do you think you what do you see as being like your secondary attribute or ability score? What do you think will be the highest there? Do you think you might go strength or?
Yeah, I think because damage will, because I think we have agile, we will have agile and finesse for our fists. Mm-hmm. So we'll be, our to hit will be dex, but our damage will still be strength based. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think primarily the second best skill will probably be strength, maybe tied with wisdom or cha. I really don't want to lean into charisma too much.
Yeah, we have a cha based character, yeah. So probably don't need to go.
Maybe wisdom just to help with perception and things like that.
The Oracle class is charisma based.
Yeah, and good.
Wisely, I think Solarian is no longer charisma, which it was in first D. Making it con is like their primary is like interesting. It feels like still the soldier should be con, but
yeah,
it's you know, it's mostly for like those explosive Solarian abilities, so they can be a little tanky. That's fine.
I think do need to be a little bit tanky, but I'm always surprised that they're not their main thing. I mean, they're in tune with the cosmos, which always just seems wisdom based to me. Mm-hmm. I always feel like Solarians should have more wisdom things revolve around them, since you know, attunement, you know, is, and being in tune with the photon or graviton, it just mirrors like the monk so much.
Yeah,
I feel like it should be wisdom, but they're all, you know, Slayerians are already kind of mad, so shortening it, that list up is probably fine.
Yeah, so pretty interesting class, I would say, in general, especially if you're not going the sniper route.
Yeah, I really like aim. I really like how they've retuned aim. And, you know, Striker allows me to, you know, it, you know, there's like a line in the Striker description. It's like, oh yeah, anything that normally says is good with small arms, or you need a small arm, you know, you're fine. You can just use your fist. So, you know, it's not like I'm going to be really restricted. And obviously, while they're not, you know, yeah, like you said, also crazy skills anymore, they still have got great reflex, great perception and initiative. So I still think I still think the class is going to be very fun, very fast paced and action orientated, which will be really fun to play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you see your character carrying around a gun or martial weapon?
Yeah, probably some kind of martial weapon that they just hide in the, like a dagger or something
for
when you need to like cut a line or things where you can't just punch your way out of.
I've not come across any of those myself so far, but
sometimes monsters eat you too, and you just can't punch a stomach out. So
oh yeah, keep a dagger on you.
You got to keep a dagger on you.
It seems like you've got a good grasp on the operative. Let's talk about fetchlings. Why was this one of your top three options, maybe? A Pathfinder ancestry?
Yeah, I mean, this caught my attention. I was looking before the draft, I was looking through everything. And, you know, originally I wrote it down kind of on a whim because it was a 3-point buy, and like I already said, I worry was kind of hoping to spend those three on class, but
yeah,
I wrote it down anyway because one of the things that I liked, you know, or I was kind of going for was a character whose maybe initial appearance was off-putting or concerning, or unknown. And but again, it was this idea that it was like, oh, who the heck is that? Oh, wow, this person's so jovial and disarming. You know, oh, I'm interested. I kind of want to. And so kind of that play of a character that gave this initial appearance that creates concern or kind of spikes the attention of people, but then their attitude doesn't match up with that appearance and they sort of get disarmed by that. So like
what if Mr. Rogers looked like a emo goth person, yeah, like black exactly. hair, like, hello, children.
Yeah. And so because fetchlings are linked to the shadow plane and have this sort of pale appearance, you know, I can very much see, I saw it as like, oh, this is a kind of ancestry where there's probably certain, you know, it would be easy for there to be certain stereotypes or misgivings of or around, you know, like with Vesk, it's always like, oh, you're a big brute. You're a big militaristic, hard-headed, stubborn kind of individual. And that's kind of the initial impression that people get just on viewing a Vesk. But with fetchlings, it's very, oh, you're shadowy and quiet and sneaky and unassuming. But then you interact with this character and they're very bright and personable and outgoing and sort of flips that a little bit.
Have you looked at fetchlings' options at all, like the heritages or feats, ancestry feats?
Yeah, one of the things I thought was really cool, they have a level one feat called, what is it called?
What's it about? I'm looking at them right now.
I know, I'm looking. It's, I believe it allows you to, oh no, I can't find it.
Describe it to me.
It allowed you to like move, like do a double move or something like that when I was reading it.
Let's see. Slink allows you to move further while in darkness. That looks to be the only one with a move aspect.
Hold on, I'm an idiot, I think. Is it? Oh, wait. It might have been.
Don't say it was a Vlaka feat you were looking at.
No. Okay, so actually what it is, right, it's Shrouded Magic. So Shrouded Magic gives you a cantrip from the occult spell list.
Oh, so you're thinking of a spell.
Yeah, so the spell I was wanting to take was Warp Step, which is a two-action cantrip. It gives me a +5 foot status bonus to your speed. You then stride twice, and you can also use it in conjunction with Burrow, Climb, Fly, or Swim if you have that movement type. So for two actions, you can close a lot of distance. You're getting an extra 10 feet, +5 for each one that you do. And
it's not bad.
It's not bad. And then especially if we combine that with, you know, I'm thinking all later in the adventure, if I get like a fly speed or something, I'll be able to use this. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. We talked about a little bit. You might be maybe the most normal looking, more humanoid looking of the folks here, because we've got a Patra, a Vesk, a Vlaka, and a Kala. So we've got cat, lizard, dog, fish man. you're the monkey man, the human-esque man.
You
could describe it however you want. Like I said, if you wanted to be a weirder fetchling from the other plane, that's fine. You know, this is Starfinder fetchlings, which don't really have specific, you know, definitions. So, all right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like I'll probably be just a normal human looking individual with just the kind of fetchling flavor. Perhaps I might try to take some ancestry feats that warp that a little bit, but we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, last thing to talk about, maybe the longest, was, you know, the aspects of your character creation that didn't come up in the draft. You know, we talked about the ABCs, ancestries, backgrounds, classes. The next part is to talk about, you know, where's this character going to go? And it's a question I've asked all of you a few times here and there. You know, what have you liked? What aspects of characters you've played in the past have you really enjoyed? Do you have a favorite past character?
It's hard. I think, I mean, Edras from obviously season one and Cassius from Demon Roll No Crits are sort of tied. You know, both of those characters, obviously very different characters, but both similar in that they allowed me a lot of freedoms with the character, in that, you know, I didn't give them, you know, with Praetir, who was the latest character we dealt with, he had a very specific goal. He was striving for something very unique. Especially because, you know, they were the de facto leader, but also at one point, what did I start out as? A witch warper? No. What was I? Patrick, save me. Help me.
Time wizard.
I was a time wizard.
Precog.
Thank you. Yes. You know, as both with the precog and then eventually as the mystic, I felt very trapped by both the abilities that they had and by the sort of tenets that I gave the character to follow with their ambition. And, you know, with Devasho back in season three, you know, they were militaristic and family orientated, and that was kind of everything I took from them. So one of the things, but with Edras and Cassius, their whole thing was they were both, oddly enough, very One Piece influenced by the fact that, like, their whole kind of thing was being free and having freedoms and expressing themselves how they wanted, when they wanted to, without being sort of tied down by anything in particular. Edras eventually found a way to channel that less piratey and more with Sarenrae, which gave him the structure I think he needed, since he wasn't really an intelligent individual. But
classically traditional. Yeah,
very traditionally. But, you know, and with Cassius, you know, it was finding that freedom, but learning the difference between, you know, freedom, chaos, and selfishness. And you're learning how to, that your responsibility doesn't just immediately mean, you know, being shackled in shackles. So I'm trying to find that same sort of rhythm with this character, where I give myself, you know, and I give the character a lot of room to breathe, and I don't kind of bind them up with, you know, a really strong ambition or, you know, kind of set of tenets that I give or create beforehand.
Veto.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll be able to recapture some of the elements of past seasons or past characters with this new series? Do you think you'll see elements of those characters in this Fetchling operative?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope they're a little of, I think, you know, if I have a concern, it's that the character might be a little closer to Cassius, or I could accidentally fall into that for sure. Because Cassius is fairly outgoing and likable, and I want this character to be that way, but without the charismatic aspect to it, right? You know, Cassius was charismatic and drew people to him, even if he was being stupid or selfish. But this character shouldn't have that sort of natural charismatic talent, but still be outgoing. So, you know, I hope that will, having that sort of freedom, you know, whereas with, you know, Praetir was pretty guarded, and I think it kept me from creating meaningful links with the other characters, and which happened with Devasho a little bit, only because he was primarily concerned with his family that already existed. He wasn't really trying to create a new family. And any of the other characters I made, who cares? And so, you know, I think with this character being more outgoing And, you know, with some of the things I've learned, I'm hoping that, yeah, there will be a little bit more room for that magic, that organic magic to occur like it has previously.
Speaking of previous, Achilles heals an int of 8 was a previous character of yours' biggest Achilles heel. Some other players in the past have had either like only hand to hand or melee combat or only ranged. Do you have a planned blind spot or weakness?
Yeah,
beyond the I don't have this skill.
I always do. You know, obviously a big running joke has been, how can I, you know, oh, Tyler makes the game harder on himself, whether it's Prater being like, I'm only going to take mind affecting spells until like the very, very end.
Jeez Louise, Tyler.
Or, I mean, Devasha was just, I'm going to be a Solarian, but I'm going to be a shield Solarian because they're worse in every way. And the other thing I did with Devasha was I specifically did lopsided attunement where he was like all graviton.
Right.
Until there was a specific story beat we hit, and then I balanced it. But Andross was 8. And Cassius, I don't think if Cassius really had one. I don't think I really did that with him.
He was perfectly, practically perfect.
He was practically perfect. But yeah, no, I did want to do a restriction on this, but I didn't want the restriction. I wanted the restriction to feel more in universe. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to seem more of like, oh, this is something holding this character back, not because Tyler is a psychopath, but because, you know, there's a story, there's an actual story there. And so, you know, I think without talking about it too much, one of the things that I'll be dealing with in the beginning is only being able to use non-lethal means of attack.
Right.
And kind of exploring that a little bit.
There are a few non-lethal options pretty early on.
Mm-hmm.
But
and
melee attacks count.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Melee attacks count. Do you think that you have an agenda for your adventurer? Is there a reason that they are adventuring, something that might cause them to join up with a crew at the beginning of this Guilt of the Grave World AP? Yeah, something beyond, I need money.
Yes. I didn't want to have the I need money, you know, sort of motivation. I wanted this character to start in a hole that they needed to sort of climb out of by proving themselves. So, you know, when we introduce this character, they're going to be a little bit on the back foot, a little bit maybe in trouble with authority and needing to sort of kind of having a deal worked out with them, some sort of deal or some sort of agreement to sort of prove themselves that, you know, again, it's that idea of like, oh, when you see a fetchling, maybe you think that they're from the shadow plane. They're shadowy. And so leaning into that a little bit by creating even more circumstances around their background, which is like, oh yeah, no, they're bad. And, you know, hey, why shouldn't maybe like, you know, some sort of government or some sort of court or authority being like, oh, why should we believe you? Why wouldn't we just throw you into a prison or something like that? And trying to create a situation where this character really is like, no, I'm nothing like that. This is all very bad circumstance, wrong place, wrong time, and having to work themselves out of that through wherever the adventure, you know, sort of starts.
Let's see here. I have so many questions.
Which is kind of fun, which I like too, because I wanted to give them motivation for interacting with the rest of the group, right? So if the whole thing is, oh, I'm here to prove myself and I need people to believe that, you know, I'm not what they might think I am, then it gives them reason to like seek out social interactions and try to talk to these people and try to get them on their side so that when it's all said and done, you know, they go back to, you know, whatever trouble there, whoever is, you know, sort of trying to maintain this guy and say, no, they are who they say they are. They're a good person. And thus bringing them sort of out of that hole.
Do you see them being tied to any organizations or religions, for example, would be one, or in-universe kind of groups. You know, you've very famously had a ex-pirate in Idros, and yeah, do you, is there anywhere in the lore you expect this character to be coming from or to be going towards?
Yeah, I haven't. One of the things that I've always, you know, liked about Starfinder is there's, you know, and I think we've all done this, is we've all, you know, very few characters have been pro-corporate or heavily into corporate, because it's just more fun to be anti-corporate. But I think that I would, you know, and I don't have a specific one in mind, but having this character tied to a corporation, maybe a weapons corporation, kind of like how Nikithi was. There's another one of my characters that I shoehorned into a drone that was bad.
You've named them all. Named all the characters.
And so having them be tied to them and sort of maybe having that corporation be partially responsible for why he's having to dig himself out of a hole, you know, and trying to, and wanted to try to create the question mark in people's minds of, is this guy a bad guy, or did he just work for a bad company who had him doing bad things? You're right. Or, you know, maybe, or was he trapped there, or trying to create a sort of a situation where there's ambiguity between, you know, where people are questioning, or, you know, try, or able to maybe give leniency because they're not, you know, maybe they're not quite sure whether bad things were done because this person is evil, or bad things were done because, you know, they got sucked up into some corporate scheme and couldn't find a way out and ended up doing some illegal stuff.
I mean, I would like to talk to you more about specifics of the character that you have in mind, but I understand we should probably leave, because I think you and maybe Rebecca are probably the most far along in your kind of background work at this point. I think we should leave it for the podcast. You know, at this point, we're a few weeks away from maybe playing some, so...
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want, we could always talk about my family heritage, you know, my dad, my mom, my two brothers.
Swear to God, Tyler. If I get another book background from you, I'm not gonna read it again.
Yeah. I'll do what I've done every year. Not read that nonsense.
Print it out, throw it in the fire, keep my family warm for the entire winter. Good times.
I can't help it.
Well, yeah, no, I have more questions, but we can answer them, or I guess I should say I have suggestions that I'll give you off air, or maybe closer to when we get to playing. But yeah, that let's wrap up this episode, because I feel like we've talked a lot, and you're already pretty far along for the character. Do you have, you don't have to say any now, but do you have character names? Is there any like fetchling specific names you were looking at, or
Bob? Just Bob.
Short for Bobbert.
Yeah, you know, I always try to find some sort of influence to name the character after, and I really haven't found that yet. Having them be an operative, you know, I thought about trying to look up like famous assassins or famous sort of snipers or things like that, and maybe creating a name and doing like a hybrid name out of it, but haven't nailed down the specifics yet. So
okay, well, no need to. I just wondering.
Toucan Sam. Toucan. Can we take that one? No. And he just carries around two cans.
Don't get on his bad side. He'll can ya. He'll come to can ya. Right, so that is going to do it for us here. We have a whole bunch of these episodes, so I'm not sure where this is coming in our turn order. This might be the last one. You might.
Oh, hey. It's
kind of early, but I'm not sure where these will come out. So I thank you Tyler, for being here. And thank you, listeners, thank you. As you can tell, Tyler's already very far along in his character creation process. So you can give him ideas in the Discord, but at that point, we'll already be playing the characters. So maybe down the line suggestions for you. Is that okay, Tyler, if they give you some ideas?
Yeah. Yeah, and if you want to know what high school my character attended, just let me know.
Gotcha. If you want the novella sent to you. All right, so that is going to do it. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you. Hopefully, you look forward to this 2.0 series. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think we're making something special.
Well, we will see. It's the most fun part about this is it's all question marks. It's all up in the air still. Yeah. So we'll see where the chips fall. Let them fall where they may. All right. That's going to do it for us for this early episode zero of Cosmic Crit 2.0 series one. We will catch you next time. Thank you for listening. Goodbye, everyone.
Farewell.
Cosmic Crit, the Starfinder role-playing game and adventure paths are trademarks of Paizo. All Pathfinder and Starfinder images are property of Paizo and are used with permission.